raise awareness and to and discuss it. And we're going to try to do that today as well. So today what I want to do is just cover a few remaining topics, important topics. One is something which I want to just highlight and just raise a little bit of awareness around that topic, which is suicide and prevention, a very, very painful but unfortunately a critical topic, which will also link a little bit into the just an interesting thing to raise the confidentiality in mental illness and what the Jewish perspective, if it fits with the legal perspective and how that all works and so on. Also, I was going to do this last week, but I want to actually just, because we're talking about mental health from a Jewish perspective, so there's some really interesting stuff in very interesting correspondence of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, a blessed memory, around mental health, and I want to talk about it a little bit, which will lead into the final thing, which is just summing up the partnership between the mental professional, the health expert, the psychologist, psychiatrist, the social worker, family, rabbi, and so on and so forth, and then sum it all up and talk about what we can all do to raise awareness, to help people who are challenged by mental illness, mental stress, and also what we can do about prevention, which is always an ideal thing. I was just thinking, I know everyone's muted, but is there any questions? Maybe you can just put on the chat, maybe towards the end, either you can send it to Rabbi Friedman or just on regular chat, and maybe at the end we can deal with some of those questions. Okay. So, the first is somewhat of a very, very painful topic. It's the topic of suicide, and I want to talk about it carefully, just for the purpose of raising awareness, but and also talk about the Jewish perspective. So, on the one hand, we know that in Judaism there's an incredible, incredible emphasis on life. And there's nothing more sacred than life in Jewish thought particularly. We, as much as keeping Shabbos, for example, in Jewish thinking is such an important thing, but we know we break Shabbos and we break every mitzvah, not only to save a life, but even to prolong a life, even if it means prolonging a life only for a very short amount of time, even for a few hours. There just can be nothing greater than saving someone's life. The Talmud tells us, "Hamatzil nefesh achat keilu hitzil kol ha'olam." If someone saves one life, it's like he saved the entire world. And it's just such an important thing. And therefore, there's no question that something when someone takes their own life or passes away for whatever reason, it is incredibly tragic, incredibly tragic. And there's something we need to do to see, to raise awareness, and if there's anything a person could do, and even if there's a chance for perhaps saving someone's life, even one life, it's all worth it. And it's just an unthinkable tragedy. But what we'll also talk about later is to understand that suicide in general, particularly with the awareness that we have today, is treated like dying from an illness. So it is tragic, and it's extremely tragic. But the view, very often, this is important because there's a lot of myths and misunderstandings around suicide, which I want to just talk about, just for the purpose of clarity, which is around the concept of people taking their own life. The statistics are not so good about how many people succumb to this illness, to the process of actually taking their own life. It's something we really need to work very hard to minimize. Unfortunately, during this time, the literature is that actually it's gone up, which is really sad. That's why it is an important topic. So, it's an important topic, and as I said previously, I'm not a trained therapist, and it's particularly when it comes to this issue, really we all need a little bit of training to see what we can do in terms of prevention, which is now around the Jewish Care, Jewish House, and other organizations that run a whole campaign in terms of suicide prevention, and therefore will be around, and I think it's, you know, I've actually been in contact with them recently to sort of try and increase that awareness and see what we can do to actually get more and more people exposed to that information. But I just want to sort of, so tonight I'm just talking much more in general terms, but it's important to know how to talk about it, when to talk about it. I mean, I've learned lectures from Dr. Pelkovitz about this, and he cited some interesting research. For example, there was a tragic case once in America where a student in a school, in a high school, took their own life, and the principal wanted to make an assembly on the anniversary, and he was advised against that because sometimes too much, highlighting it too much or making it so open and exposing it in the wrong way could actually sometimes trigger some copycat behavior, and that could be very, very tragic as well. So all these things are very complicated, and it's important to get the right idea. However, it is still important to be a little bit aware. So just before I go into a little bit of that awareness, just to comment on the Jewish perspective on suicide. Now, there's a myth, and I've been asked this, unfortunately, a number of times, even when I've been involved in cases which involve suicide, where people have always sort of assumed that Jewish view has a thing that when someone takes their own life, they are not buried in the same place as everyone else, that the Kaddish is not recited, the regular Shiva is not observed, and so on and so forth. So I just need to be very, very clear about this, because this is rooted in something real, but very, very, very uncommon. There is a part of the Talmud, and this goes back, it's not just a modern thing that we started looking at it differently because we have awareness of mental illness. It actually goes back to parts of the Talmud. There's a part of the Talmud called Masechta Smachot, which deals with things like this, mourning and stuff like that. And over there, it does mention this halakha. It mentions the law that if someone takes their own life, which we know, of course, take one's own life is prohibited by Jewish law, it's rooted very early on in the Torah, in the portion of Noach. Self-harm generally is prohibited. Our body doesn't belong to us. Our life doesn't belong to us. It's God's. And therefore, self-harm, taking one's own life, is a serious matter. And it is something which is prohibited. And in fact, the Talmud does say that if someone took their own life, but let me just say from the outset, it says it, but it defines it. So if someone takes their own life, it is true that they are not buried with other people, and that the laws of Shiva and Kaddish are somewhat different. However, if you look in that part of it, and that's why people always think that, but when you look at the Talmud, it actually clarifies it to a very, very important degree. And it talks about when a person takes their own life with absolute clarity, which would even exclude someone jumping off a balcony or jumping off a tree, as the Talmud says. Because what the Talmud says is that you don't know. It has to be done in such a way where it is absolutely clear that the person with a completely sound mind told other people that they're going to take their own life, which is really a scenario which is very rare anyways, because if you were standing around and someone said to you that, hopefully we would do something about it and call someone, call the police, call an ambulance, or whatever the case is, it wouldn't let that happen anyway. But if someone was absolutely clear and with a lucid mind and said that we're going to do that, that's when that halakha applies. But if someone was under any stress, and it's interesting the way the Talmud defines this, it could be any sort of trauma. Now we know that today a large percentage, of suicide comes from depression, often depression which is physiological, a complete illness that is completely out of control, and that the person cannot control that depression. It doesn't mean that they can't control that choice of taking their own lives, because taking suicide often has to do with some sort of a moment of clarity, actually. But nevertheless, the person is suffering in pain, and we know that the pain of depression is very, very big. But the Talmud goes even so far as to talk about that if someone was traumatized, someone is mentally stressed, it could be from shame, it could be from a deep sense of guilt, it could be for whatever reason, then that is not considered suicide. And in fact, and I need to mention this because actually it's related to a general concept, and we'll come back to it towards the end. But the Talmud talks about a case of a son of a person called Gorgos. And it appears from the context of the Talmud that Gorgos was an abusive father. He was a hard father, he was really abusive father. And what happened was that the son of Gorgos skipped school. He was obviously a troubled child, a troubled youngster. It wasn't just a child, maybe it was a youngster, a teenager even. And he skipped school. And his father saw him skipping school, and he made a signal to him that you better wait till you come home kind of thing. I'm going to punish you. And the child was so traumatized and so afraid that he went and took his own life, unfortunately, tragically. And they asked the sages at the time, a question what to do, and they said, everything as normal. That is not considered a suicide. So people do, we know that and today we have much more awareness of that. And today we have much more awareness of the trauma, the shame, the sense of failure and hopelessness, the sense of being completely undervalued, and particularly the cases of depression with a big D, as I call it, right? The depression where people honestly suffer, and they suffer over a period of time, and they suffer sometimes to a point where it becomes unbearable. That doesn't make the suicide okay. And of course, we have to do everything in our power to stop it, just as we would do with any illness. Any illness that a person was going through, we would do everything in our power to save the person from that illness. But an illness it is. And therefore, today, the the overwhelming accepted mainstream view is that we go back to that Talmud and we say that unless it's with clarity of mind, and therefore we say that if someone took their own life and they were suffering from a mental illness and they were mentally weak or mentally stressed, we don't term that as suicide with clarity, and therefore we treat that person like any other person who passed away from an illness. It doesn't make it better, it doesn't make it less tragic, it is extremely tragic, but it makes it understanding of the person and it makes the judgment a little bit less, and it makes the approach that we have, that we understand the trauma, we understand the tragedy, and we understand the fact that the person passed away from an illness like everyone else. Now, this is that story in the Talmud, by the way, is an incredibly powerful story for a different reason, because it gives us a bit of an insight onto the trauma that a person can suffer from fear, from being abused, from being ridiculed, from being pushed down, particularly as a child, and we'll come back to that later. And it gives us a bit of an insight of the effects of fear and what trauma can actually have an effect on a person, which is an unbelievable thing. It's interesting because one could obviously ask the question about, well, if that's the case, then when could you have the scenario that the Talmud mentions of taking one's own life with absolute clarity? It's a very rare thing to happen. And that's true. It is probably extremely rare. And even if we had a doubt, we probably wouldn't conclude that it was that way. But I did think about something, because it's interesting that, you know, we look at suicide as people jumping off a bridge or whatever the case is. But, you know, a few years ago, there was this big debate and this huge discussion. And there was that older man, I think he was a doctor or a scientist or something, and he traveled to Sweden. He was very clear. He made a very, very conscious decision to actually travel to Sweden and to end his own life. And the way it happens over there is that, you know, they had to be interviewed and they had to be of sane mind and they had to be in good health and so on and so forth. They were not traumatized by any illness. And the conclusion was that they were able to make that choice. And he made that choice. Obviously, that's completely the antithesis of Jewish values, even though he was very old and even though he wasn't in such good health and so on. But the Torah would absolutely prohibit such a thing. And he made that completely clear decision to actually, I've forgotten his name, to actually take his own life. And he's the person that has to actually press the button at the end. And maybe that's actually a case of real suicide. But regular suicide that we talk about is we deem it coming from an illness, coming from stress, coming from trauma, coming from depression, and therefore we treat it as normal in the Jewish view. Having said that, therefore, there is things that we need to be aware of. Now, the reason that I'm bringing this up is because apart from the general awareness and consciousness of mental illness, when it comes to this, we have to be particularly aware. And if we know someone that's suffering, we know someone that's really alone, you know, there's so much we can do. We can never actually know sometimes how we can actually save a life. I want to just tell you a story. And the story is of a child in a school. This is a real story. It's in the States. There was a Jewish studies teacher who had a child in a school. The child was really struggling. And, you know, often there's so many things that children particularly experience failure, whether it's learning difficulties or just getting into trouble in school and so on and so forth. And eventually this child completely gave up all connection to Jewish observance, eventually was asked to leave the school, eventually moved away and so on and so forth. And this particular teacher had a custom, lost touch with the child, but had a custom that every birthday, every year on this child's birthday, the teacher would just take a few minutes, write a card, and mail it to that particular person. A number of years later, I think after a while probably stopped, he lost contact, whatever the case was, but a number of years later, he bumped into this guy, and this kid, who was no longer a kid, who was now a young adult or an adult, said to the teacher, "I need to thank you for saving my life." And he said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Let me tell you what happened. I really went off a bad path. I spiraled down into a very bad state. I got into a very, very bad state of mind. And one day I decided I'm just going to end it all. And as I was about to do that, out of the corner of my eye, I saw the top of my shelf where I put all the cards that you had sent me for each birthday. And suddenly a flash came into my mind that if I was valuable enough for you to send me a birthday card each year, so then I shouldn't do what I'm about to do." And in fact, there was a turning around point, and he got himself back together. So essentially, this teacher, without even knowing it, saved his life. I bring that up because we can never know. We can never know how we can impact someone else. And we can even save a life. So we might always not, we're not professionals, we're not therapists, and nor should we try and treat things that we're not qualified to treat. But if we think someone is having suicidal thoughts, if we think someone is really depressed, if we have any inkling, if someone says to us something that might be strange, out of character, that indicates the fact that they're undergoing mental stress and they might be prone to harm themselves in any way, we need to raise an alarm. We need to say to someone, we need to go to someone, we need to either push them to get help, or we need to tell someone in their family, or if you know the therapist, we need to tell the therapist. We must do something about it. We cannot stand by and do nothing. Number one. And number two, we really need to just reach out to people who might be alone, people who might be suffering, people who we know are going through stress, people who we know may be going through depression, especially during the time that we're going through now. We never know what's going through people's minds. We never know what can be going through people's minds. And sometimes just an ordinary hello, reaching out, seeing how you are, teaching people that they are valuable, that they're like that teacher who sent a birthday card, just doing something nice to someone, no amazing things, just lifting someone's spirit to make sure that the people understand that they are valued. Depression comes from suicide and come from depression. Suicide actually comes from a sense of what we call despair, what we call yiush in Hebrew, where a person has given up, it's just all too much. And sometimes a little bit of strength, a little bit of hope. So both things are important. The awareness is important just to be a little bit, have the antennas up. In other words, just to really understand that when we pick up something that is suspicious, we need to do something about it. Number one. And number two, to actually give people hope and give people who might be vulnerable just a bit of hope and strength. And you never know how we can be reaching out. We never know what we can actually be doing. Okay, now, part of that discussion, and I want to just bring that in, it's just an interesting discussion, and I'll connect it to a very tragic story that I'm aware of. I mean, thank God it didn't turn out to be a huge tragedy, but nevertheless, I want to just talk about confidentiality in this concept. Now, we know that confidentiality is actually a very strict thing, and I'll share with you an interesting idea, that keeping people's confidence in Jewish law is actually stricter than in secular law. What I mean by that is, in secular law, if I share with you a piece of information, it's not by default confidential, unless I tell you that it's confidential, I believe, anyway. In Jewish law, it doesn't actually quite work. If I show you a piece of information, I actually have to explicitly give you permission to share. And if you don't know that you have permission, you're actually not permitted to share it. So confidentiality in Jewish law, privacy, confidentiality, these things are actually considered really, really important. However, what's even more important than that is saving someone's life. Now, I know that most countries, and for good reasons, have extremely, extremely strict laws when it comes to confidentiality between someone and their professional, their mental professional, their doctor, their therapist, their psychologist, and so on and so forth. When a person is underage, they're still considered a child. So, of course, there's someone who's nominated, their guardian, and they can have permission to share stuff and to talk to the therapist and so on and so forth. However, when someone becomes an adult, a legal adult, they no longer have permission. No one has permission. The therapist, the doctor, or the social worker, no longer has permission to share information about that client with anyone unless the client give specific permission. Now, I know that in most countries, the law is that if someone is in immediate danger, someone is in absolute danger, then of course the therapist will share that with a parent or something like that because the person is in immediate danger. But if they're not in immediate danger, and I'll tell you a story of someone that I know, it's overseas, someone that I know well, someone who had mental illness issues, like eating disorders, they had a very, very bad eating disorder. A girl, a young girl, she was in therapy and she was getting help. She suffered also from depression because a lot of times the mental illness areas are interrelated and sort of compound each other and so on and so forth. And eventually she became a legal adult, and part of the eating disorder condition was the need for control. And therefore she cut out her parents to a very large extent about what they could know or not know from the mental health professional. What turned out was that she was visiting her psychiatrist every so often, but she wasn't attending the eating disorder therapy that she should have been. So she was being given medicine, she was given medication for depression from the psychiatrist, but she wasn't actually going for the therapy that she needed for her learning for her eating disorder. As a result, she was having a relapse in terms, she was doing well for a while, but then she had a complete relapse. She was losing a lot of weight. She wasn't absorbing the depression medicine properly because she didn't have the right weight or nutrition. The psychiatrist knew about it, but was bound by the legalities of not sharing it with her parents. And the problem with that is, and I've heard stories in Australia that way also, that sometimes just parents don't know where their child is and no one can tell them, hospitals can't tell them, and they're under a lot of stress. The problem with all this is that although privacy and confidentiality is such an important thing, and there's good reason for that patient-professional partnership and confidentiality sort of structure, but nevertheless, when someone is undergoing real mental health issues, they're often very, very mentally stressed and therefore are not able to make decisions with clarity. And it's really important sometimes for someone else to be there as a support. And I know at government level, in Australia, because I was at a meeting where this was discussed by some sort of representatives of government officials who are involved in suicide prevention and mental health issues that are currently on the table at government level. They actually want to address this because it's a real, real, real problem. Now, in Jewish law, that psychiatrist would definitely have to share the information because it's potentially dangerous. Because we have a rule in Torah law that when something is pikuach nefesh, something is at risk of putting someone else's life in danger, not only if it's a definite danger, but even if it is what we call safek pikuach nefesh, even if it's in doubt that it could lead to danger, we need to break the laws of the Torah, including the law of confidentiality. So although in Torah law it's very, very, very strict, but if you ever in a situation where you know someone is potentially in danger, even if it's a professional, really they need to find some way of sharing that with someone and give support, so it shouldn't lead, God forbid, to a stage where it's really, 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 really dangerous. Sometimes the best thing to do is to ask a professional, and just generally, by the way, coming back to the area of suicide, generally in mental health, but particularly in the area of suicide, if you suspect someone is at risk, you're not sure exactly what to do, don't start being a therapist, but right away talk to someone, talk to a trained therapist, talk to someone who's a professional, and they can guide you on what you do, but let's at least create the awareness and the desire to be on the lookout. And if we know people who are perhaps suffering, to always be on the lookout and to have our antennas out there. And if there's a problem, to raise awareness, to ask someone for guidance, for guidance, to lift people's spirits, even with something simple, and we never know who we could actually save. Okay, so I want to sort of put this all together by discussing what we can do about it, what our role is, what's the role of family, what's the role of friends, what's the role of all of us really as a community. And before we do that, I want to first just look at something. I want to look at a body of correspondence, a very, very interesting body of correspondence from the Lubavitcher Rebbe on mental health. Now, there's actually a whole book that someone compiled of all his letters in English that he wrote to people who were in distress and were suffering from emotional or mental issues, and to see how he addresses them in various different forms. Now, particularly in the area of depression and anxiety, where the book is somewhat confusing, you need to read it properly, is this. I mean, thousands of people sought the Rebbe's counsel, the Rebbe's advice, in a lot of matters, but these matters as well, of health and emotional health and psychological and spiritual health and so on and so forth. But you always need to know what he's talking about. It's very, very clear from the body of letters that in many, many of these letters, the Rebbe is actually addressing depression or anxiety with a small d or a small a. And you remember the first time I spoke about this, that we all have our personality weaknesses where not necessarily is it at the level of a sickness or out of control. It's just, you know, we're feeling down or we're feeling worried about something and we go to a spiritual mentor to sort it out, right? That's something we don't need a therapist necessarily for. But then there's clinical depression, clinical anxiety, which is depression with a big D and depression with a big A, as I said, where it becomes much, much more different. So when you'll see in this book, if you read the Rebbe's letters, I'm just bringing this up, you'll see I'm putting this all together in a moment. When he talks about depression with a small D or depression with a small or anxiety with a small A, there the clear emphasis is on religious upgrade. What I mean by that is using concepts like belief in God in Ashkacha Pratit, like, for example, believing that everything is by divine providence, faith in God. He talks about gratitude a lot. He talks about healthy guilt versus negative guilt, and so on and so forth. And these are all important topics, and these are incredibly supportive when it comes to a person, regular person, without suffering from mental illness, where it's just trying to get ourselves out of feeling bad or feeling down or feeling anxious about something at a normal level. These concepts are very, very important. I'm bringing them up because they do relate also in a different role, as I'll soon explain, as I did the first time. They do act as a supportive role as well when it comes to mental illness. So I want to just give you a couple of quotes. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. It's a whole book, right? But for example, he writes to one person who's in a bit of a depressed state, and he says, "Judging by your writing, I trust it is unnecessary to emphasize to you at length that one of the foundations of our faith is the firm conviction that God's providence extends to everyone individually." In other words, the concept is that you are where you're supposed to be. Things happen because they're supposed to and have a purpose. All those things make us, if we're able to internalize these concepts, it makes it much easier to deal with challenge, right? Therefore, he says, "Your writing that you find life a burden and the general mood which your letter is written and completely out of harmony with the Jewish way of life," right? And so on and so forth. He talks about faith. That a person is sad about something, a person is disillusioned when we believe, when we understand that everything comes from God, and ultimately we might not understand it, but everything has a purpose and a meaning, and we need to give things meaning, even when it's challenge and difficulty and so forth, it becomes much, much more easier to carry. Talks about gratitude. Says this should lead the person to recognize and acknowledge the blessings and goodness that he has received from God. And quite possibly on more than one occasion, a person has received these blessings without any effort on his part. And therefore, the more we focus on the positive, the more we focus on gratitude. There's so much research out there today about the power of gratitude, that when we just go through normal life and we just put negative or pessimistic or feeling down and negative and worried about life without it reaching a clinical state of actual real depression or real anxiety, then gratitude is very, very powerful. Faith is very powerful. The belief in God that everything is Ashkacha Pratit. Bitachon, trusting in God that He's in control, that everything will, you know, giving up our own control and trusting that He's in control. All these things are incredibly important and incredibly helpful. At the same time, many of the letters in that book deal with real issues of depression and anxiety, right? Where there's real mental illness, and the Rebbe is very, very strong about the necessity to seek professional help. But one interesting pattern, that's why I want to bring it up, because it's a really good formula. As Jews, when we talk about the Torah perspective and the Jewish perspective on mental health. So I started the series by saying that it's like any other illness, so we have to seek, we have to go to a doctor, we have to go to a therapist, we have to go to a professional, and it's an obligation. But at the same time, we have to support ourselves spiritually, because as Jews, the body and the soul work together, right? So in many of the letters, there's a very interesting formula that the Lubavitcher Rebbe develops when there's even real mental illness, which is incredibly insightful, incredibly important for us to sort of use that as a pattern and use that as a formula. Because many of the letters where he deals with people undergoing real mental health issues, he creates a formula out of three components. One is professional healing, seeking professional medical advice. Very important. He emphasizes that tremendously. At the same time, he says, one should also seek support from Jewish and spiritual concepts. So we spoke about this before. While it is true that when you're going through a depression, because any mental illness where it's different from a regular illness, even there, spiritual support is really important, but this particularly mental health, is that the mental health issues are very interwoven, they're very interrelated with mindsets, with patterns of thinking, with belief systems, with emotional issues, and very often together, with the expert help, together with the professional healing, it's an amazingly supportive component to add in the spiritual healing. To think about things like faith, hashkacha pratit, everything's by divine providence. To think about things like gratitude, joy, and to study them, and to get yourself a spiritual mentor that will actually support together with the therapist. I found from my own experience helping people that the best thing always in these instances is to work with the therapist, to get permission to talk to a therapist or professional or a doctor and to work with them and to increase that spiritual awareness, because belief, faith, gratitude, and a sense of purpose, a person understanding that they have a purpose in this life, that God created the world for a reason, that they can maybe increase in a reasonable way in doing a mitzvah and bringing some, or maybe in their kindness, in their giving, in their generosity of themselves to help other people. Often a lot of these things give the person a sense of meaning and purpose. Not only does that work as a prevention, but it also works even as part of the cure, so that it helps people also become stronger, and that helps the professional advice and the professional healing work better. So those two things go amazingly hand in hand as an unbelievable partnership. And the third component he often talks about is the increase in spiritual energy, in spiritual blessing. So I'll give you some example of what I mean, right? So there's one particular case. First of all, I'll just grab this letter over here. So, for example, one particular example is he addresses a person with OCD. We talked about this last week, obsessive compulsive disorder, right? So, he talks about seeking mental professional health. He also says to him, you know, he tells him he has to be able to control it and so on and so forth. So that's the sort of the clinical approach, right? He says strengthening your general health. He should seek a medical professional, and he says strengthening your general health would thus be of additional assistance in easing your condition. Right? He says you should consult with a doctor and a friend and follow the doctor's directives. Very, very important. Makes it very, very clear that it's a mental health issue and he needs a doctor. At the same time, the Rebbe encourages them to, you know, include spiritual concepts. And then the third, as we said before, and then the third thing is he says you should inspect the mezuzot in your home because you need spiritual protection. So that's not expecting your mezuzah at home, making sure it's a kosher mezuzah. That's not a mindset issue. That's not a belief issue, which is a good support for the healing. That's purely a strengthening of spirituality, which brings blessings. So it's that pattern of those three components that he brings in an interesting way. A very interesting letter, I want to point out also, which is a very, very important thing, and it's important when we have a loved one, or even if ourselves we're going through mental issues or mental health issues, or we know a loved one or a friend, and so on and so forth. I'll just read this piece to you, because it's really, really important. He says, in reply to your late arriving letter in which you describe the situation in the family, particularly with regard to health matters, and you ask my opinion. Now, it seems that what was happening from the context of the letter, that there was a person in the family that was going through tremendous health issues, I think it was mental health issues, and it was affecting the whole family. And the Rebbe wrote the following. He said, generally speaking, your writing that the doctor stated that there's no hope for full recovery is very strange indeed, when in many known similar situations, there was clearly a complete recovery. And this goes to the heart of physical health as well, but mental health as well, included as well. We talk about in the Torah, we brought this in the very, very first session, that the Talmud says the expression that the doctor was given permission to heal. That's a very, very important sentence. Not, first of all, on a simple level, it means that we can go to doctors and we have to consult doctors and medical professionals. That's part of the obligation of protecting our health. But if you look deeply at that expression, it also tells us a very important thing. That nitan rushut lerofe lerapot. A doctor is given permission to heal. The doctor's function is to heal, not to predict gloom and doom. Not to say that this prognosis is bad and there's no chance and there's no healing. Right? Mental health can be very, very complicated. Sometimes people live with mental health issues for years and decades. But the approach has to be always that there is hope. Because he continues to write, he says, with regard to that particular situation, it is impossible to know clearly with certainty about the outcome. But to state that it's hopeless is definitely out of place. At the very most he can say, and indeed all that a human being is capable of saying is, he does not take responsibility for the future if his advice is heeded. He cannot guarantee it, but he can certainly give hope. And that's part of the issue as well. Also, sometimes people's condition are exacerbated by lack of hope. By thinking, because failure has been repeated so many times, you know, I've heard this from people who suffer from addiction, that they fail so many times to the point where they get to the point where they think there's just no hope, they're not going to be able to do it again. But then if someone instills hope in them and someone holds their hand and step by step, they regain their confidence and they regain their belief and their hope and determination that there is hope, that becomes so much more important, and they've turned their They've turned their life around. And that's such an important thing, that yes, we need to go and seek professional help and medical help, but it has to be from someone that will give us hope. And we need to give the people hope as well. There's another letter where he admonishes someone for not listening to the mental health professionals, not going to hospital, and so on and so forth. I just thought I'd share that all with you. One other very interesting thing I'll share with you in two very interesting letters, that he says very clearly that mental health depends on spiritual health, and therefore the two need to go together. Another very interesting thing is that the Rebbe writes that, "I find the articles of Dr. Viktor Frankl of particular interest with regard to the above." The Rebbe was a very, very big supporter of logotherapy, because it's very, very in line with Jewish thinking. So logotherapy, for those that are not familiar with this, is from Dr. Viktor Frankl, who was a psychiatrist before the war. And he wrote, after the war, he wrote Man's Search for Meaning, which became a bestseller. In his time, by the way, his theory was not accepted. He almost gave up. It was very much a departure from Freudian thinking. But nevertheless, it became afterwards so widely accepted and became probably the foundation for what is known today as positive psychology. Positive psychology is very, very important, because it doesn't always focus on the illness. It focuses on the hope. It focuses on the good part. And it focuses on the areas where their strength, where their healing could come. And the Rebbe was a very big follower of logotherapy. Logotherapy means the therapy that he used to actually give people meaning. Logotherapy means the therapy of meaning. So, and hence the book, Man's Search for Meaning, where his thesis was that at the core essence of everyone's soul, there's a deep desire and need to live a life of meaning. And often, again, when someone suffers from a mental health issue that is clinical, depression, that is physiological, it's simply an illness. It doesn't mean that the person is living a life without meaning, but often they go together. And often the prevention of the trigger of depression or anxiety is living a life of meaning. Joy and happiness comes from meaning. And therefore, both as a prevention and as a supportive role in the therapy, the concept of using that form of therapy, logotherapy, is very, very, very powerful. And he was a very big follower of that. So I mentioned that all to you because I wanted to just sort of strengthen that concept, that from a Jewish perspective, because this was all about mental health from a Jewish perspective, the healing and the strengthening of people's mental health is a combination and a partnership between treating it as one would treat any other medical issue, on the one hand. On the other hand, however, including in a very strong way the spiritual support and the meaningful support and the gratitude and all the concepts that are so dear to us as Jewish people, which coming together and being a supportive role in the healing of a person that suffers from mental health issues can be extremely powerful and extremely important. So, just putting it all together. I began the series because I said it's really, really important to raise awareness. Raise awareness means, first of all, to be take away the stigma, for us to be able to have discussions about mental health issues, for us to be able to have discussions at home with loved ones, with relatives, with friends about mental health issues, for creating a culture where people feel freer to talk about these issues, where people don't keep these things inside. One of the greatest supportive concepts that could happen when we involve ourselves in the healing of mental health issues is the ability to share, the ability to unload, the ability to know that you're not being judged, to know that that there's no stigma attached. So the awareness, just to be aware and just to reach out to people and to be aware when we detect that someone is out of character, someone is down, just to be aware of that these issues do exist, and they exist in a very prevalent way, and that sometimes we just need to reach out to people to see how we can support them and how we can assist them and how we can maybe encourage them to seek the proper help. Right? We need to raise awareness because we need to get used to looking out for people who are vulnerable, people who are lonely, people who have sort of disappeared under the radar. If you know someone, and you know in your own life, someone who's just, you know, hasn't surfaced for a while, it's really important to reach out to them, because we don't know that it's unbelievable what comes out sometimes. I mean, I've had so many experiences where people have sort of revealed to me after a while, or they've come to see me, and you would never know, because often when people, this is a very important point, by the way, often when people suffer mental health issues, they keep it in and they put up a huge front. They put up a huge front where they appear to be 100% normal, and in public, they just appear to be absolutely normal. Until, if you have a bit of awareness, or you talk to them, or you have a good relationship with them, sometimes they open up and you would never know the stuff that comes out. It's absolutely amazing. So therefore, just that concept of just reaching out to people. But it's not just about detecting mental health. It's also about prevention. It's also about what can we do to prevent mental health issues. And I think this is particularly true for as those of you listening who have young children or perhaps grandchildren or come into contact with young people or just generally people, right? Relationships they have with people. One of the greatest things that is connected with, you know, just the other day I heard such a powerful podcast of a person who I actually know who went through addiction issues, went through other substance abuse issues, and eventually went to therapy and went to a 12-step program and so on and so forth and really turned his life around, and his last 5 years have been amazing. And he told his story, and an amazing part of the story was his lack of self-worth, his lack of self-esteem. The root, in other words, you can develop all kinds of things later. Some things are unpreventable, some things are just really real sicknesses. But often it does go together, as I've said many times now, with triggers that are involved with the emotional state of the person. And so often it goes back to the feeling of not being valued, the feeling of being undervalued or feeling bad or not, or feeling worthless, is, I guess, is the word to say. I'll just tell you a short story of someone I met a few years ago who was over 90. Over 90. And he told me a very painful story. He went through the war, he survived, he built a family. And in his youth, he went to a religious school in, I think, in Hungary. And he told me a story. He says, you know, I used to learn Talmud, because he could see I was a rabbi. And in the Talmud one class, he says, you know, we were learning a section and we're going around. And we came to a part that was very complex and it was my turn to read. And the teacher said to me, oh, you won't understand this anyways, let the next guy read. And he said to me, in his Hungarian accent, he says to me, chutzpah, he said. Can you imagine what kind of cheek, nerve that teacher had? And when he said that, and I kid you not, I looked at his face and I could see pain. The pain that he had from, I don't know, must be 80 years before, of being a 10-year-old or something in a classroom where a teacher said something like that to him, left a dent, left a bruise, left a scar that he still carried with him. He went through much bigger things afterwards. He went through the war, he went through some unbelievable things, but yet he still remembered, they still lived with him, right? We can never know. The power of speech, by the way, the power of speech is so amazing. Things that we say to people that are helpful, I don't mean in a sort of a superficial way, but if we say things to people, it doesn't have to only be children, it can be adults. Things that instill hope, things that we show that they valued, things that we show that we value them. It could be people that work for us, people that are friends. People have a need to be valued, to feel worth, in worth, not worthless. And we never know what we could be doing. So one of the ways that we can create prevention of mental illness is to create connections, reaching out to people, reaching out to people a bit under the radar, saying things to people and doing things to people and giving people a sense of worth and value. The other thing we do is giving people a sense of meaning, a sense of purpose, to invite people to be involved in things that are, you know, volunteering issues, things that are communal issues, things that are just have meaning and purpose, because meaning and purpose strengthens people to such an extent. We need to practice listening skills, right? Listening skills is really, really important. We need to make sure that when, if someone ever does, and this is why this awareness is so critical, that we need to know that when someone reaches out to us and shares just a little bit, to listen in to such a degree that we invite more, right? That the person feels listened to without judgment. The worst thing that can happen to someone is if they come and just share with you a little bit, you know, someone says to you, I'm really going through a hard time. I don't know, you know, I had a problem last week with someone, and you say, ah, that's nothing, you'll get over it. That could be terrible, that could be a disaster actually. But we need to learn, because we increase our awareness in mental health issues, we need to learn that sometimes when someone shares something small, it might be just trying to look for an opening. They're trying to test you to see, are you judging them? Are you not judging them? And that could be amazing if you say, well, I can see you going through pain. I can see you're uncomfortable. You want to share with me more? You want to tell me about it? And so on and so forth, right? So we need to be able to do that. We need to be able to remove the stigma so people feel comfortable talking about it. We need to pick up on hints that people say if they're in distress but they don't want to show it. We need to be able to learn to pick it up. Now, I'm not suggesting that we go around and we are anxious all the time, you know, are we hearing the right things? Are we picking up? We need to live life normally, and we're not trained therapists, and therefore that's not our role. But we can be a role to bring people calmness, to bring people happiness, by just creating connections, listening, removing stigma. If someone does bring up something, if we do notice something, to act upon it, not to leave it, and to make sure that we're strengthening people. Because often people are affected by a tremendous amount of pain that could have come from years gone back. I mean, this is also such a tremendous lesson for parents of young children or teachers of young children, that the trauma or the embarrassment, the sense of shame, sense of guilt, sense of being undervalued, all these things, sense of being put down, humiliation. This is in the Talmud. Talmud tells how devastating that could be, and it could leave long-lasting effects, similar to the one I saw in that person's face. So I just end off with the following concept, that we're coming up next week to the Festival of Shavuot. Festival of Shavuot is the time that God gave us the Torah at Mount Sinai. We all know that. It was the epic moment. It was the ultimate moment in Jewish history. It was the moment. It was the moment that defined us as a nation. It defined us as who we are. Right? And at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, you know, God told us the Ten Commandments. And the first Ten Commandments, of course, is the commandment to believe in God. And it came with a statement that God said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem, your God. In Hebrew, when you say you're something, we can conjugate it two ways. It could be in the singular or the plural. So if I say, if God was talking to 3 million people and all the Jewish souls that were going to ever exist, it would make more sense for He to say, Anochi Hashem Elokeichem, I am your God in the plural. But He didn't say that. God said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem, your God in the singular. Right? In the singular. Because as the commentators explain, that God was talking to every single individual. What God was saying to each and every one of us on Shavuot is, you are important. You make a difference. The very fact I gave you life is because I want your service. I want your contribution. Often people go through distress, which could trigger all sorts of mental health issues, because they don't feel that they're making a valuable contribution. One of the things that we have to believe in ourselves, and we have to believe in other people, and we have to communicate that to other people, is that maybe, you know, people say, I'm a failure, I haven't been successful, I haven't lived a life of meaning, and they sort of leave that, they get into despair, and they sort of live that life with a sense of worthlessness. The message we need to get out to people is that no, every individual is so important. And we demonstrate that by reaching out to individuals, by focusing on individuals. Often we focus on big things, communal issues, but we don't focus on individuals. Individuals are so important that we never know what we can achieve by strengthening another individual. And I just want to end off with two things. And maybe we'll take some questions if there is any. There's a famous line in the Torah, in the story of Joseph, where Joseph was in prison. He was in the dumps. He was thrown into jail in Egypt, far away from his family. But yet he somehow wasn't a victim, and he wasn't depressed, and he was strong. And in prison, he befriended the butler and the baker. And one morning he comes in, and they didn't look so good. And he said four words, Madua pneichem ra'im hayom. Loosely paraphrased, translated as, what's wrong? You look down. Why is your face bad today? Is everything okay? Right? And because he said that, and he said that sincerely, they opened up. And they told him about their dreams. The dreams that they had, and the butler, and the baker, and the rest is all the whole story of Joseph. And eventually, because of that, Joseph actually was freed from prison and became the viceroy of Egypt. All because why? All because he said four words. He said, are you okay? You know, in suicide prevention, there's this whole concept of Are You Okay Day. Because sometimes just a simple Are You Okay, in a sincere way, can just lift someone. Are you okay? I think Are You Okay shouldn't be one day, it should be every day. Every day we should say to someone, are you okay? Is everything all right? Are you fine? In a sincere way, because you never know what can become of those few words. And finally, there's some of you have heard this from me before, but it's such a powerful idea. Finally, the message we have to tell ourselves, the message we have to get to other people in terms of being a support, if we ever are in the position where someone is opening up to us in terms of feeling worthless or feeling not valuable, so besides getting them to the proper help and getting them the proper spiritual support and so on, as a friend, some of the messages we need to bring to people is the following. And it comes from the first prayer of every day. The prayer we say every day is Modeh Ani Lefanecha. We thank God, we have gratitude in the morning for just being alive. Right? And in that prayer, those who are familiar with the prayer, we say an interesting phrase. We say, Mode ani lefanecha, I thankfully acknowledge and thank you, God, eternal King, you have given back my soul with great compassion. I woke up in the morning, I don't take it for granted, I understand the blessing of life. And then we say, Rabba emunatecha, great is your faithfulness. Which simply means that the faith that we have in God is very big. The problem with that is it doesn't actually make sense. Because we should say, Rabba emunatenu, great is our faith. We're the one that's declaring the gratitude. We're the one that we're saying thank you. So we should end by saying, great is our faith in you, God. But some of the commentaries explain the most powerful thing. That we wake up each morning, we say, Rabba emunatecha, great is your faith, God. Your faith that you have in me, that God believes in us. The very fact that we get up in the morning, whoever gets up in the morning, no matter how strong they are, how weak they are, no matter what their skill set is, or how weak they are, or how successful they are, or how much they failed, the fact that God gives us back our soul in the morning, the fact that we get up in the morning, is a sign that God trusts us. That's a powerful, powerful message. That's a message to, in many, many different ways, using many, many different phrases and words and sentences, that's a message to convey. It's a message of worth. It's a message of being valued. And apart from all the other awareness and all the other things that we said, of listening to people and removing the stigma and having awareness and getting people well, and we should be comfortable talking about mental health and so on and so forth, we should also be strengthening each other. And one of the ways we strengthen each other is by strengthening this point, to understand the value of an individual. And this is so important right now because there are people struggling. At different levels, some people don't mind being at home, but there are people going through distress, whether it's financial distress, emotional distress, whatever the distress is, and we have to reach out to people who we know and say to them, you are not defined by your circumstances, you're not defined by your success, you're defined by the very fact that you exist. The fact that God gave you back your soul this morning means that God trusts you, He believes in you. That's why I gave you another day, so you can make this day meaningful and purposeful, so giving people that strength and that hope. That's just a message perhaps that could work as a support, could work as a prevention. And I think it's a worthwhile message for us to tell ourselves, our family, our children, our friends, and communicate it in whatever way it is to each other, strengthening each other, lifting each other up, and bringing hope and determination and inner strength to those people that we come in contact with. So I wanted to thank everyone who's being part of this. Thank you so much for listening. I can't see all of you, but you came back every week, so I really, really appreciate that. If this can be the start of a conversation just to create awareness, there's books out of it, there's articles about it, there's people you can talk to in each one's community, there are mental health professionals that you can discuss with just to get a more of a sense and to sort of raise the awareness a little bit. And hopefully when we raise the awareness, that could be very, very powerful. Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. And I don't know if there are any questions or if this is the right way to do it, but if there aren't, then just thank you so much for listening and wishing everyone a lot of blessing and health and only good things.
Thank you, Rabbi Gerari. I see that there is one comment in the chat saying thanks for an outstanding presentation, which I think sums it all up.
Thank you.
There's been three outstanding weeks and you've raised so many important issues and gone really deep into it from the Jewish perspective, from the current modern-day perspective, the science perspective. And it's really appreciated to have you and your expertise come out and speak so strongly on these topics. And especially now coming close to Shavuot, the festival, which is all about unity, coming together. And unfortunately, we won't be coming together in shuls, but, you know, as you're saying, it's important to come together in other ways and to look out for each other. And this is such an important message, especially lead up for this festival, the Festival of Unity, which is Shavuot. So thank you for helping getting us all ready for Shavuot and for this universal message of caring for each other and how each one of us has a responsibility not to leave it up to the professionals or the rabbis, but each one of us has a network of people, of friends, of family, and it's up to us to care for them. And just the smallest IUA case, as you said, Rabbi Gerari, can make a big difference. So never underestimate the power of a sincere how are you.
That's it.
So Rabbi Gerari, thank you very much. Everyone who's listening, Shukur, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and Chag Sameach.
To being in touch very soon, being in contact soon with more online programs from Ritz Hashem. So Chag Sameach, everyone. The Yom Tov for next week. and we'll see you back online soon.
Excellent.
Thank you, Rabbi Gary.
All the best, all the best. Yeah.